Good morning. Today is the third Sunday of Advent, and it is known as Gaudet Sunday or Rose Sunday. The Vandegrift family lit the pink candle on the Advent wreath for us today, as is the custom. Growing up as an acolyte, I thought that this Sunday was Mary's Sunday, and that is why the candle was pink. I was close. This is the Sunday we often hear, Mary's Magnificat. Gaudet is Latin for rejoice, and this Sunday is set apart as a time to look for joy. A few years ago, there was an organizational trend started by Japanese writer Marie Kondo. Much of her work stems from Shinto beliefs about viewing the objects that surround us as valuable rather than disposable, and finding appropriate ways to store and care for these valued possessions. One of the practices she instructs people to do as you're trying to sort through all the junk in your house is to hold an object in your hand and ask if it sparks joy. That made me belly laugh when I tried it. At the time I was trying this process, I was working in my kitchen drawers. I had 4 spatulas. I needed 2, but not one of them sparked joy for me. I really couldn't wrap my head around the concept of an object being the source of joy. I later learned that there is a linguistic difference between the words being used. The Japanese word kondo used for joy, when translated into English, roughly translates to flutter or palpitate. The word joy to me means something much larger, much deeper than that. The Japanese language is full of amazing words that describe human emotions and experiences, and I'm sure they do have a word that might come close to what I think of joy as, but Kondo's version was not it. And I'm also sure that if I try Kondo's method again, I might do better. I'm up to at least 6 spatulas now, and I can't open the utensil drawer without nearly losing my religion, so it's probably time. In our language, joy is a nebulous word. How would you describe joy to someone? Most people find it so difficult to articulate exactly what joy looks like, what joy feels like. This is not necessarily because we are devoid of joy in our lives, but I think it's because it touches places so deep within us, so deep within our souls, that it is simply beyond words. I'm not sure that there will ever be words in any language that could encompass the feeling or experience of joy. Sometimes the word happiness or joy are used interchangeably. I think this is about as useful as trying to compare Kondo's use of the word joy to my understanding of joy. Happiness and joy aren't playing on the same field. I like how Frederick Buechner describes the difference between happiness and joy. He says, happiness turns up more or less where you would expect it to. A good marriage, a rewarding job, a pleasant vacation. Joy, on the other hand, is as notoriously unpredictable as the one who bequeaths it. Joy is most definitely an unpredictable experience. Like C.S. Lewis, I too have found myself surprised by joy on many blessed occasions. I've learned that joy and sorrow can stand side by side, not in opposition to one another, but in solidarity. And I've also come to understand that the feeling of being completely unsure of what is going to happen next can lead to great joy as well. But mostly, what I've learned about the way I experience joy is that whatever is at the root of the sense of joy I feel, Jesus is the source of it all. All of today's readings speak to joy. The prophecy of joy we heard in Isaiah, being in the throes of great joy as we heard in Mary's Magnificat, and the lonely place of longing for joy where John the Baptist speaks from the gospel. The Magnificat, the song of Mary we heard sung beautifully by the choir, follows the meeting of Mary and Elizabeth after both have conceived children, much to their surprise. When Elizabeth greets Mary, the child in her womb jumps for joy. That child is John the Baptist, the one who, along with Mary, knew the magnitude of God's work in Jesus from the very beginning. Mary had just experienced anything but something predictable, and her response is not fear, but joy. In her song, she sees her connectedness to the goodness of God and to the needs of others through this child she carries, and it breaks her open with joy. She says, "My spirit rejoices. The Mighty One has done great things. He has scattered the proud, brought down the powerful from their thrones. He has lifted up the lowly, filled the hungry. He has fulfilled the promises that he made to Abraham and Sarah and their children's children from generation to generation." I just love to imagine this interaction between Mary and Elizabeth. I see them hugging each other, comparing how big their bellies are. Joy, as far as I can tell, is experienced uniquely through recognizing a deep connection to someone and something greater than oneself. And through this connection, you're able to connect to your truest self. In the gospel, we find John the Baptist questioning Jesus, "Are you the one, or are we to wait for another?" Things aren't going as John had anticipated. He, from the beginning, knew that God was at work in Jesus. But now, John is in prison, and Jesus wasn't acting the way John had expected him to. John's vision of redeeming the world and Jesus' vision squared up about like comparing happiness to joy. John was looking for something that had been expected, that Jesus had come to shake things up and force those in power out, bringing in the reign of God. Jesus' reply to John centers around what was being made right in the world through him. The blind were made to see, the lame could walk, the lepers were cleansed, the poor feasted on the good news. People being connected again to God and each other. People being lifted up and loved up and offered a chance to experience the joy in that. This wasn't what John was expecting. Jesus was redeeming God's creation not through force or power, but through love. God was doing something completely unexpected. So on this Sunday, we are called to both rejoice like Mary and admit that we struggle like John to find a reason to rejoice. The joy of Mary does not cancel out John's sorrow, but her joy stands right there beside him in his grief, showing us all the power of the redeeming love of Jesus. The joy that Jesus brings into this world has the power to transform us, to transform this whole messed up world. The collect that we heard today is my favorite. "Stir up your power, O Lord, and with great might come among us. Stir us up, Lord. Stir us up." I imagine this prayer being something like God taking a big snow globe and calling us over to watch and wonder as he shakes it up, and we sit and watch and wonder as God blankets all of creation with the peace of God's belovedness, covering it all, covering the people that we love and adore, and the people that we dismiss and ignore, all with the same tenderness. And in the hush of seeing this belovedness, like the hush of Jesus in the manger, God shakes the whole thing up again, stirring us to look with new eyes and new hearts, stirring us, although we are mightily hindered by our own sins, our pride and ignorance and fear, stirring us up with the redeeming love of Jesus, the source of joy. Stir us up, Lord, to see that you are bringing joy to those we love and the people we believe we simply cannot love. Stir us up to witness joy in birthing rooms and at gravesides. Stir us up, Jesus, to see you in hospice wings and in treatment centers, and at needle exchange sites. Stir us up to find you among your beloveds in prison cells and detention centers. Stir us, Lord, so that we can look again at relationships long broken and see there are still love left to name. Stir us, Lord, to stand in the face of hatred and proclaim the truth of your love. Stir us, Lord, to bring your joy into our homes and neighborhoods and workplaces. Stir us up so that we will be able to seek your face in everyone we meet. In these coming days, we will wait in the hushed stillness of the stable, waiting for the one to come, the one who will redeem everything. Stir us up to go out into this world, joyfully proclaiming the wonders of his love.